just wanna possess my body and mind. Welcome to Cinema Fromage's Midnight Munster. Guess what, folks? We let you down. We're 2 weeks behind, but we're back, and we're not going anywhere. So stop worrying already. Hey, we're back again this week. We got a gooey feature-packed show for you this week. We're going to be discussing for you this week 1988's The Blob, starring Kevin Dillon and Shawnee Smith, and 1985's The Stuff, about killer yogurt. Hell yeah, it sounds awesome, doesn't it? So here you get ready to go, folks. Before we jump into that, we're going to get into a little bit of the business side here. I just wanted to take this time to remind you that Midnight Munster is a product of the CinemaFromage.com website. Should you want daily reviews, news, and whatnot, check us out at CinemaFromage.com. We post all sorts of reviews up there nearly every day, from anywhere from modern masterpieces to classic creep fests. And, you know, sometimes it's good, sometimes not so good. But that's, you know, that's our thing. So now we'd also like to remind you right now that we've teamed up with PopSyndicate.com. They graciously replay our shows for us every week, which is a huge help. And they've also given us message boards. So head on over to PopSyndicate.com, check out the forums, and look under the podcast section. You will find the Midnight Munster message board. You'll also find forums for many other awesome podcasts that are friends of the show, like Night of the Living Podcast and Mail Order Zombie. If you have any questions, suggestions, or anything like that, feel free to email us at CinemaFromage.com. And I'm going to do that again because I fucked it up. Feel free to email us at cinemafromage@gmail.com. Again, that's cinemafromage@gmail.com. We'd be happy to hear any comments you have, be it criticism, praise, whatever. Missed us? Send us an email. Be happy to read it online. You can also leave us a voicemail. We'll hear a voicemail at 206-339-9459. So far, there's only been one listener out there that's ever used this voicemail, so it does work. We've verified. Now, if you want to make sure it still works, now's the time to call in, people. Again, that's 206-339-9459. Finally, you can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/cinemafromage for your daily updates and random happenings. So sit back, folks. We're going to get ready to jump into the show here. And be sure to enjoy our look back at the 80s Fright Fest, The Blob, and The Stuff. So in the words of Tenacious D, strap on, Kyle. Let's ride.
If you're a fan of science fiction, horror, crime noir, or dark fantasy, then you'll want to come join me at lordshaper.com/cryptographics, home of cryptographics podcasts. That's KryptoGraphic. See you there. Or you'll taste my whip.
If it had a mind, you could reason with it. If it had a face, you could look it in the eye. If it had a body, you could shoot it. Now, man is no longer the supreme being on this planet.
The organism is growing at a geometric rate. By all accounts, it's at least 1,000 times its original mass.
Nobody believes me about what happened tonight.
What did happen?
I want that organism alive. I think you pissed it off.
The Blob. Terror. has no shape.
The year was 1988. The hair was hockey styled. The actor was Kevin Dillon. His co-star that year was Shawnee Smith. And the movie, the 1988 remake of The Blob.
Kevin Dillon should never have long hair.
Jesus Christ, no.
Oh my God. He looked like a demented leprechaun. It was not right.
I feel bad talking about the guy. I think he's a decent actor, and I like the roles he's played and whatnot. And I usually get a good kick out of him. But good God, man. I know it was the 80s, but have some common sense.
Also, I want to know...
Your hair should not be as white as your shoulders.
I want to know who Shawnee Smith's plastic surgeon is, because she doesn't look like she has aged a day.
And I've seen her in person at Horror Hound, and she's still quite pretty in person, too.
I mean, it just amazes me.
She seems a little stuck on herself, but she's, you know...
Yeah, well, you know. She's like... She would be... Our generation, one of our generation's Scream Queens,
She's working on it.
She's been in quite a few horror films, even though my favorite thing I've ever seen her in was Summer School, where she played the pregnant girl.
So, with the 1988 remake of The Blob, this is a remake of the 1958 sci-fi classic, and it's pretty much perfectly synopsized in the title.
Yeah.
It's about a big fucking blob. And it's eating the town. Now, this movie stars, as we said, Kevin Dillon, and Shawnee Smith is our main folks here. It's got Paul McCrane that Colleen just deafened me with when she realized he was the asshole doctor on ER by shouting into the microphone. We have a cameo from Bill Moseley. There's some good names in here that show
Art
up LaFleur there.
Art LaFleur plays the Shawnee Smith's character's father.
Yes.
Who... is very recognizable. He always has the exact same short haircut, but he usually plays either a police officer or a coach.
Yeah, football coach is what I was going to say. He has been in so much stuff, and it's one of those people we can throw out some names of movies and stuff to you, and you're not going to recognize the name, but as soon as you've seen his face on the screen, you're going to say, oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
He is that recognizable.
Yes, he is.
Now, this movie is your basic sci-fi horror flick. It's got a big blob of goo that comes down in a meteor and crashes upon the earth. There's an old farmer hobo guy out in the woods with his dog, sees it, runs out to find it, take a look, see what it is, and that's when we are introduced to the blob. This movie, this theme, a lot of people speak against this remake of The Blob. I myself found it quite enjoyable, just for the cheesiness of it, the hokiness of it, and despite the fact that it was a remake, it was still a product of the 80s. And there's been many movies that have taken upon this idea and taken it further, or tweaked it a little bit, such as Slither that was out in the last couple of years. Another very good horror flick, almost the same premise as far as just starting out, except for that's more worms than a blob.
Yeah, well...
Now, granted, they could have been taken at... That's probably taken more from the original, but, it's the theory here. Now, the movie, most of us are going to be familiar with it, and I would imagine most of you out there listening are familiar with it, because it's one that's been played ad nauseum on HBO, the late-night creature features like USA...
Up! All night.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, it is one of those that gets a lot of airtime, both... this one, and I mean, granted, not so much to the original from the 50s, but yeah, The Blob is a classic. And no matter, I mean, even if you don't like the remake, the 88 remake of The Blob itself is a classic. It even runs in the background of movies, like for instance,
yes.
I believe in Grease. That was one of the movies that was being shown on Grease, was The Blob at the drive-in theater.
Now, one thing here that what made me enjoy this movie so much is the way the 80s style special effects that they've put into effect here, the makeup effects and the gore and stuff mm-hmm. like that, they're very 80s. They're very signature of the 80s of the technology at the time. They're not CGI.
Right.
They are old-fashioned latex and stuff, buckets of goo flowing around and stuff like that. And it's just
watermelon jello attacks.
It's just a hell of a lot of fun watching it. There's everything from, you know, when the... There's just so many of them. One of my favorites is the school's horn dog out in the woods with his date trying to get himself a piece, making out in the woods. And this is a scene that I hadn't seen this movie before we watched it for the show. I probably haven't watched it for a good 10, 15 years, quite a long time. And it's still a scene that sticks out in my head so well because it's such a memorable death. It's awesome. Especially with the fact that, you know, he's going to go make them a cherry...
Some cherry
cordial or something.
Cherry cooler.
Yes, it was a cherry cooler. It sounded fairly fruity for somebody, this big bohunk stud that was out there in the woods.
You got to try my cherry cooler.
But, you know, everything is 80s about this, from when the fact that he gets out of the car and opens up his trunk, and his trunk has been converted into an entire mini bar.
Which is great. I mean, that is just the coolest trunk in the world.
Yes. And he gets back in and tries to cop a feel. He's not getting any response. He thinks she's falling asleep. And the whole tension they draw out there with him for screwing around. Oh, it's so hot in here. Let me undo that button for you. How's that feel? Oh, I better do another one. As he's unbuttoning her shirt and whatnot, basically getting ready to date rape this woman because she's asleep. Mm-hmm. But in the 80s, it was comedy. And
yeah.
It was humor. But then the whole death that they work into that is wonderful because when she rolls her head over... When he bumps her, she rolls her head over, and the whole side of her face is gone. It is beautifully done, and it was one, especially watching it as a kid, when this came out in 88, I was 13, I think, and, yeah, we started school in 89, but it was, it just was a season, though, that is so graphic at the
15.
Time.
You were 15.
I started high school at 14.
Yeah, right. You were 15.
Okay, whatever. Anyway, it was a long-ass time ago. But it's someone that, at that age especially, just sticks with you so well because it's so well done, especially the ensuing attack of the blob after that. Just the fact that it goes through the girl to get to him, not around it, not over her.
Yeah, that was just... It is a very memorable death, a very memorable scene. It's one of those things that just sticks with you, along with, you know, the whole setup is just... You know, and what it does, because horror films are pretty much today's version of fairy tales, which is always about not having sex and all this stuff. And if you have sex, you're gonna die.
Yep.
So that's exactly what, you know, what it was showing. And it did a really good job of it.
Now, for our roles here... And there's some other things that go in the effects here that are completely over the top, but they're so enjoyable. One of my favorite things in here, and it's just a tiny detail that they threw in here, is when the waitress from the local diner runs out trying to call the police station, jumps in the phone booth, and the blob comes after in the phone booth and covers the phone booth. There's one brief moment in there when she's standing in that phone booth trying to call the police department, and the blob's coming up the side over the glass. She turns and looks, and you see the partially digested head go rolling by inside the blob.
And you see the badge and everything, and you realize it's the guy she's trying to call.
Yes.
And, yeah, I mean, it was just, it's very, that's always a great scene because... You've been introduced to the sheriff. You're thinking, this is the guy that's going to save us all. And then, boom, they take that out from under you.
And then you're left in the hands of the asshole deputy.
The asshole deputy who is the guy who plays... The guy plays a good asshole. I'll have to give him that much. He looks like Opie, and he just is, you know...
Yeah.
But for those of you who used to watch ER... Paul McCrane plays the deputy. He was Dr. Robert Romano.
And there's some other things in here, too. This movie is not so much on the scares as to what's going to make you jump out of your seat. They don't necessarily go for that. It goes more for your cringe moments of the blob attacking people. And it's really not...
It's more of the ooh factor.
It's more of the ooh factor, but it's not really even trying to take itself seriously to make itself... scary. It's just relishing you could tell that the filmmakers are relishing in the fact of coming up with these creative ways to kill people with this blob of goo.
Right.
And that's the whole point
because
of the whole
really
movie.
Because there really isn't that many different things you can do with a blob of goo.
Exactly.
But they actually, you know, come up with some stuff. Now, with the differences between this and the original, I mean, the original, of course, was pretty much straightforward. It was, oh, this big blob of goo is going to kill us all. Whereas this one had a more, you know, with the military coming in and the secret, you know, military group and all of that, and then even...
And that comes in later, which at the time, the whole thing with the government that comes in here later is pretty well done, too, because it's been... They gloss over the fact of where this thing's come from and what it could be and who's involved, and they gloss over it through the whole time to where all of a sudden they throw... At the time when it first came out, they throw out this new thing with these lights in the woods and stuff, and your first reaction is, oh, shit, what has this thing mutated? What is it now? And then you find out it's the good guys who aren't... Maybe not... Maybe
he's making quotations with his fingers since you guys can't see
him. But they... They could hear it in my inflection. But you might get... you might find out later that they're not necessarily as good as you think. And
well,
there's some complexity there to the plot.
In the 80s, there was a lot... That's when a lot of the conspiracy theorists came out. And
exactly.
And so it fed into all of that, you know, they're creating these things to destroy us all. Whereas in the 50s, it was... along the lines of with the Cold War going on and stuff, because you have to look at all of these, how
well, technically at that point in the 80s, too, it was the tail end of the Cold War, so it still kind of worked,
right?
Because they're catching in the original, they're catching the beginning of the Cold War, and the end, they're catching in the remake, they're catching the end of the Cold War. So you're right. You're exactly right.
But whereas in the original, it was more the soldiers and whatnot were the good guys, whereas in this one, they're kind of questionable.
Right, they're kind of questionable. And what turns out to be what they try and set up, even though it's completely transparent, you know what's going to happen. What they try and set up throughout the beginning is it's a bad guy, this rebel kid, and he turns out to be the good guy. But you expect that,
right? Right. You can. Well, you always know that it's the normal pattern, especially for movies in the 80s. The rough, tough, you know, no rules for me type guy, and the goody two shoes girl, you know, the sweet little goody two shoes girl whose dad is the pharmacist, and everything's
for reference,
off.
See Grease, see Crybaby.
Yeah, I mean, you just have
it's a theme that's been done so many times,
done to death, but it's pretty much, you know, you know that they're going to be the ones that work through it. A lot of people have attempted to break that mold where the goody two shoes girl gets killed off and the tough guy gets killed off, and you know, you have totally different characters who you don't expect, which is nice and fresh, but a lot of times it doesn't work right.
Right. Now, you're right, exactly right. Now, as far as performances go too, as much as I like Kevin Dillon and enjoy him, he's got jack shit as far as the Rebel Without a Cause thing goes, compared to Steve McQueen, who played the role originally.
Well, Steve McQueen,
which is sad for Kevin Dillon, because he's got some pretty big shoes to fill.
He does, and it,
because you don't get much cooler,
you can,
and much more badass than Steve McQueen.
Yeah, there's no, it was a losing battle for poor Kevin Dillon.
For reference to that, see The Dow of Steve.
Yes, The Dow of Steve, very good movie.
Yeah, and so overall, though, this movie just...
Well, also, before you go
okay,
on
okay, go
that,
ahead.
As far as these types of movies go, we know that The Blob, like I'm going back to what I had started saying about it being a classic and everything, and how this movie, a lot of people didn't like the 80s remake because they wanted to stick closer to the original idea of what The Blob was about, whereas this one opens itself up to the dreaded sequel, which, of course, they never made, I don't think, that I know of. Did they ever make a sequel?
No, not that. I'm pretty sure they did.
Because they opened it up for a sequel with the one piece that the pastor kept.
Yes.
But,
which could have been interesting, too.
Whereas in the original, they take, if I'm I may be mistaken. I may be confusing this with another movie with a similar aspect, but they took the... because they knew that cold would defeat this thing, and they took it to... in a big, huge blanket-like thing to Antarctica. I'm just picturing it, because I remember watching The Blob on Monsters HD like a couple of years ago, but it's been so long and I've slept since then. But and it gave you closure, whereas this one, it doesn't give you that closure. It takes you into a whole new, whereas not just the military's corrupt, but now we're bringing in the corruption of religion.
Right. And it's not necessarily what started out to be. Whereas the military came in with an agenda, your religion was corrupted by the Blob, not
right.
coming in with its own agenda.
Right.
They started out pure and
yeah.
doing what they're supposed to.
Right. And a lot of people didn't like that fact.
For me, I liked it because it was a good end cap to the whole thing. And it was... I didn't get the feeling that they were necessarily going to... You could see where they opened it up for a sequel. I didn't necessarily get the feeling that that's definitely what they're saying. It was a nice little thing to leave you hanging. But at the same time, that's because I'm watching this 20 years after the fact that it came out.
Right. But, I mean, it's just one of those movies, though, that the 88 remake did not give me closure that I like with these types of horror films. When I know there's not going to be a sequel, when I know there's not a sequel, that, you know, well, so now... You know, keep me up nights wondering what happened to that little piece of blob that's in the little canister, man. It'll drive me insane because I want to know. I want that story to continue now. But at the same time, I'm like, you know.
Nah, see, I didn't get that myself. The interesting note here, as I'm looking through IMDb, the corrupted minister that came back corrupted at the end
mm-hmm.
was the announcer for the Upright Citizens Brigade.
I saw that too.
Named El Close. Now, for me, I didn't have a problem with the closure because your main plot and your main characters that you're worried about through the whole thing, their situation is resolved. This is something that was tacked on extra. Now, in a modern sensibilities, if they were to do this now with that same ending, this is an ending that would be tacked on after the credits that all your friends were telling you to stick around afterwards.
Right.
That's what it felt like.
True.
So I didn't necessarily have the necessary problems for it. It just felt like a stinger that was added on there for extra fun. Now, this movie here, this Blob, this version of the Blob, I should say, is directed by Chuck Russell. Chuck is a director. You've known many of his movies. He's directed other such movies such as A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, The Mask, Eraser, Bless the Child, The Scorpion King, and Prodigy, which is coming out soon. So he's still working here. And looking at some of his past films, or some of his other films, like The Scorpion King was complete crap. Eraser, again, crap. The Mask was okay. Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors is...
I like that one.
I like that one. It's not a lot of people's favorites. It's kind of a love-hate situation, the same as this remake version of The Blob.
Yeah.
So, a lot of people aren't going to have a lot of faith in the guy's track record. It's, you know, it's kind of a... It's toss-up on whether you're going to like it or not. You got to be... Especially if you're purist against the remakes. This was one that's not part of the current chain of them. This is a sign, though, that it's been done... This is obviously an example that's been done in the past. To me, it's been done fairly well. He's also... Chuck Russell also wrote this screenplay for this remake, and he also wrote the original movie he wrote was Dreamscape from back in the early 80s, 84, which was a good one. That one starred Dennis Quaid, I want to say, and Max von Sydow had psychics and stuff and modifying people's dreams. That one was a fun little movie. It might be one we want to look at because it was a little different for the time. So, final thoughts on The Blob remake.
It's a classic. It's enjoyable. It's something, you know, if you haven't watched it, you just need to because it's The Blob. Even though it is the remake of The Blob, it's still, you know, it still ranks up there. It should be just watched. Just for a night of classic horror.
I'm going to agree with you fully on this one. This one is, it's kind of, in a way, when you look back on it, it's kind of the epitome of 80s horror. It's got all the staples of 80s horror except for boobs.
Yeah, there were no boobs in this.
Yes. Someday, Shawnee Smith will show us her boobs. We can hope.
Well, hopefully her boobs are, you know, like, you know.
She's got a pretty good plastic surgeon. She'll be in good shape.
Hopefully they're all done up well. But with all the money she's probably spent on her face, you know.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you spend it on the boobs, too?
Yeah, well, you know. She does do, you know, the Scream Queen stuff, so.
But it is a very representative of 80s horror flicks. And if you're a horror nerd, if you haven't seen it, it's one you need to see and decide for yourself. It's, like Colleen said, it's definitely a lot of fun. It's a nice remake that I ended up enjoying a lot.
I would say don't go into it looking at it as a remake. Look at it as a different telling of the story, because where there are some similarities, it has some different aspects to it. So don't go in thinking you're going to be watching the same as the 50s version. The 80s version has a little bit of a different take to it, just like with all sorts of, you know, different versions of, you know, fairy tales and mythology. The myth for the blob is a little bit different in this, and I think that's just worth a watch.
There you have it, folks.
Hey folks, Eric here from the Bloody Good Horror Podcast, and I'm here today to talk to you about decisions. Sometimes you have a noisy neighbor that you just don't know how to deal with. Maybe you've got someone tied up in your basement and you're not really sure how long you should leave him there. Or maybe you're having a tough time deciding what to do with the stray cat that's keeping you up all night. And that's why I'm here today, folks, because a decision to listen to Bloody Good Horror is an easy one. So do yourself a favor and check out Bloody Good Horror today. That's bloodygoodhorror.com, the one choice in life that's easy. Plus, we'll help you figure out where to bury that dead body you're driving around with. And don't worry, if you didn't see anything, neither did we.
The stuff is a product of nature, a deadly living organism. It is addictive and destructive. It can overcome your mind and take over your body, and nothing can stop it.
No! Don't eat that! I saw it moving in the refrigerator.
Here, Jason. Take some.
There is something alive in there.
They're good for us, Jason. They kill the bad things inside us.
Tonight, America is in grave danger.
So are you prepared to say on the air that you've actually seen people devoured by the stuff?
Oh, hell yes. And what's worse, I've seen what's left of them when the stuff gets through and comes back up.
In 1985, we are introduced to Michael Moriarty, starring as David Mo Rutherford, because when they offer him money, he always wants Mo, as working as an industrial spy hired by a rival ice cream company to find out just exactly what the ingredients are to the new addicting snack treat sweeping the nation called This Stuff, which happens to be synonymous with the name of the movie. 1985's The Stuff, starring Michael Moriarty, Paul Sorvino, Danny Aiello, and a few other people there that you'd recognize running through in there.
Garrett Morris.
As Chocolate Chip Charlie W. Hobbs. And Garrett Morris, as Colleen pointed out last night, hasn't really aged much in between now and 85. And
he must have Shawnee Smith's same plastic surgeon.
Yes, and he's a cool as hell old guy. So the stuff starts out plot-wise. This is labeled as a horror comedy / sci-fi. It goes along well with our other feature this week with The Blob, because this is about the attack.
A big pile of goo.
Pile of goo. This one isn't quite as aggressive. It's more subtle in its ways. It starts out with two miners somewhere, I believe in Georgia.
Yeah.
That they stated these two old miners are walking around, and this one old miner's going to take a whiz or something, looks down, and he finds this bubbling white goo coming out of the ground. So what's he do? He sticks it in his fucking mouth.
Of course. I mean, you see a big pile of white goo on the ground outside of a mine.
Yes.
The first thing you do is put it in your mouth.
Ooh, what's this? Bird shit? On the gold. But he finds out it tastes really good, so they decide to market it and sell it to the world. And we cut instantly to the stuff mania is taking over the nation. There's commercials on it. They've got it all glorified, being sold by commercials by women in fur coats because it's glamorous, and families are eating it, and all this good stuff. And nobody really suspects anything. They just think it's a good-tasting treat.
And it's supposedly low in calorie. And
yeah, low in calorie.
Well, this was from the 80s, so it was during the whole, you know, natural food phase where everybody was, you know, Diet Coke and Diet Pepsi and Tab and all that. It was all cool to be everything low fat and whatnot.
That well, if Diet like, Coke is overtaking my brain, I welcome my new overlords. So we now jump to a young Jason is at home. He wakes up in the middle of the night from a nightmare. Decides to go downstairs and rummage around in the kitchen for a late night snack. As he opens the refrigerator door, he sees that the tub of the stuff they have in the refrigerator has been knocked over, and it is crawling about their refrigerator. He freaks out. His dad shows up and acts like an asshole and treats it like the kid's been sneaking out of the house when all he's been doing is getting up and go out downstairs. Kid refuses to eat the stuff. Parents don't understand. And that sets the tone of what the hell is the stuff.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm sorry, I was distracted. His brother was Brian Bloom, and he's got the prettiest blue eyes.
Oh, Lord. Yes, Jason has a brother in here. Jason is played by Scott Bloom. His brother is actually his older brother in the movie, Brian Bloom. He doesn't have much of a part. It comes up later as we see that the stuff starts taking over. Now, eventually, Michael Moriarty is hired in to find out what's behind this stuff from this rival company, because they're getting outsold, and they're jealous. And so he starts his investigation and starts getting more and more curious at what's going on. More suspicious of what's going on. At one point, he's in a small town where they first discovered this stuff that his investigations led to, and there's hardly anybody in the town, and he runs into Garrett Morris, who plays Chocolate Chip Charlie Hobbs, who owns this cookie company.
Chocolate Chip Charlie
really big.
Cookies.
And, but his brothers, out of nowhere, his brothers and nephews sold the company out from under him and sold all the shares to the stuff,
mm-hmm.
which is how the stuff is working their way into the nation's viewpoints, because they're buying all the chocolate chip cookies restaurants across the country and converting them into the stuff restaurants.
Right, everything is being converted to the stuff. Everybody's become addicted to it, and it's, you know, it's all about just having the stuff. They have, that's all anybody wants to eat, and you know. And that's it.
Well, at first it's very subtle, and people just like it a lot, and they're all talking about it. But as the movie progresses, you notice that there's a lot. It's becoming more and more insidious. To where, as for instance, Jason comes home one night and finds out that his parents have thrown away all of the food in the kitchen and in the house. They've stuffed it all in the trash can, and the refrigerator's full of nothing but the stuff.
Right.
Because we start to find out that the stuff is slowly taking over people's minds.
Yeah, it's attacking you from the inside, whereas the blob was all about, you know, devouring you from the outside, you know, and this is now being ingested into us, and it's taking us over.
And it slowly takes you over and makes you work to their will.
Right. And
now, there's a lot of good throwbacks here. Like Colleen was saying earlier, it's early 80s. Now, the other thing that they play on here is also in the early 80s, mid-80s, is the fear of corporate giants.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that started to raise them. Mom and pop, that's when we started to see a lot of the mom and pop stores and restaurants and stuff being pushed out by the bigger corporations.
Right.
you start to see nationwide drives for certain products and people go fanatical over them, and that plays off of that a lot.
Yeah, there are a lot of jabs about the whole everything that was going on during that era.
Right. And that aspect of it's actually done really well. Where the problems come in, though, is the plot jumps around at random sometimes. Yeah. And they don't show a lot of detail because they gloss over it or skip over it completely. And so you're kind of left scratching your head thinking, what the hell?
Yeah, there's a lot of editing problems with this movie. It really, you know, this is perfect for someone who has ADHD, where, you know, you just can't.
There's not a lot of cohesive scenes.
Yeah, a lot of it just is chopped. It's just chopped and thrown together. And it, you know, it made it a little bit difficult for me to watch because I was just like, huh?
For an example, there's a scene later on in the late in the movie where Jason is escaping from somebody that's controlled by the blob or by the stuff. Sorry, wrong movie. And we see him creeping up on a abandoned rock quarry in this town where the where they'd set up this factory for the stuff. Cut to 10 minutes later, and all of a sudden, Jason's inside in a milk tanker.
Yeah.
And we have no idea why he's in there. We have no idea how he got in there. He's just there.
Yeah, all of a sudden, yeah, he's going into a cave, and all of a sudden, the cave has now transformed into a tanker. And yeah, that made a no sense. It, you know. But I think this movie was definitely a Passion Pit drive-in theater fodder movie.
To an extent, yeah.
I mean, this is perfect for the drive-in theater because it has enough comedy so when you're going to get the, you know, walking to the concession stand, you're going to get a few giggles. But then, you know, when you're in the car with, you know, making out, you're not really going to miss anything.
Right, because a good chunk of this movie, the second half of the second act and all the way through majority of the third act is nothing but repetition of stuff.
Yeah.
That's not an intended pun. But it's a repetition of things happening over and over again. And frankly, it bugs down there in the final third of the movie and gets a little boring and starts to feel more of a chore to get through. Whereas the first half of the movie is fairly enjoyable.
It was cute. It was cute. There's a little bit of humor in there. Moriarty's character is just fun to watch.
Yeah, now that's a goof. Michael Moriarty is what makes the comedy in this movie work. The comedy angle, because he's the only one that's actually our comic relief throughout the whole thing, and it's not necessarily written that way, but Michael Moriarty's delivery of it is just wonderful. In that he's fun to watch. He's a weird dude. He's got a unique delivery that's all his own.
Yeah. Yeah. He's different in this. And
he's a very creepy guy on his own. Even when he's, not trying to be his character is not supposed to be. Now, you probably you would know Michael Moriarty if you've seen him. He's been in an episode of the Masters of Horror, the Pick Me Up episode. He was with Jim Wheeler, the truck driver. That was an episode that also starred Fairuza Balk. I knew it had an attractive brunette in it. I was thinking it was Christina Ricci last night when I was telling Colleen about it. He's been in the 4400. He's been in, there's another big one that he was in. He was in Along Came a Spider, Mindstorm.
Yeah, I mean, in this movie, though, he kind of was stepping out of his normal kind of creepy characters, and he's trying to be a little bit more suave and, you know, like a man of mystery. I mean, James Bond, he wasn't, so...
No.
But he was attempting that.
He was also in Q, the Winged Serpent, which is directed by the same person as well who directed this movie.
Q, the Winged Serpent. That was a good one.
Yes. So, but he's just a unique guy, and he's what makes this movie worth watching because his delivery is, while it's intentional from him to help with the laughs and make it funny, his delivery is definitely the funniest part of the movie. And Garrett Martin throws in there for a little bit, or Garrett Morris throws in there a little bit with the humor too, with his whole Fist of Fury thing.
Yeah.
he's
a wiry little guy, and he's just, you know, full of energy, and I thought he brought a lot to the chocolate chip character. He was just very...
Yeah.
He's a character himself, and he has a great comic timing that, you know, most people don't have. So, you know, I enjoyed him. I was kind of sad Danny Aiello... Ayo's character, it was very short, brief time for him, and I've always enjoyed things that he's done. I absolutely love, I'm like, and a lot of people hate this movie, but I am a huge Hudson Hawk fan.
Yes.
And
would you like to swing on a star?
I know so many people hate that movie, and I don't understand why they hate it, but it is an awesome movie. And you know, in this movie though, he really was only in it for a very brief moment and gets eaten by his dog. Yeah, we didn't get to see much of his comedy.
Yeah,
and he does have a great comic timing as well.
Right, and he's got a minor part in that. It's just a supporting role for him. But, I mean, he was good for what he's there, but it would have been nice to see more of him. Now, this movie is written and directed by Larry Cohen, who you know from the It's Alive series.
Mm-hmm.
With the monster mutant babies.
Yes.
Full Moon High. He's done, he directed that episode of Masters of Horror, Pick Me Up. He's done a lot of different stuff that you'd be familiar with. Deadly Illusion, Wicked Stepmother, A Return to Salem's Lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, and as I mentioned before, he also directed Cue the Winged Serpent, starring Michael Moriarty and David Carradine, which is also a classic, if not bad movie. It's worth watching
because
it's
to
fun
watch.
And it's cheesiness. So there's a lot here for the stuff that's perhaps not... There's a lot to the stuff to like, but it's going to be a little bit of work to get through it. It's definitely a unique movie of the 80s. It's a little bit different. They've got a good political message behind it with the whole corporate fear and whatnot, mm-hmm. and the corporate mania. It's not as engaging as the 1988 version of The Blob.
Right. Well, it's too choppy. You know, other than the little bits of humor here and there, it kind of drags.
Right. And there's a lot to the filmmaking in this movie that I don't know if it's because of budget or what, but there's a lot to this movie. Though it came out in 85, it feels very much like it was made in the late 70s. It's got a lot of the same aesthetics, a lot of the same qualities to it.
Yeah. It was very polyester-esque.
Yes.
There was a lot... I don't know. There's so much... It can get confusing when you watch it, but, you know, just for the little jabs at 80s politics and, you know, that right. era. If you're a fan of the 80s, it's a movie to see.
Now, this movie, as we've said before, it is a horror comedy. There was the beginning starts off with a little bit of laughs thrown in there to help break up the tension. There's a little bit of mystery going on that works fairly well. Then the movie goes on and as we start to see the stuff taking over things, and they dwell on it a little bit too much with the stuff with the different people that the stuff's taking over. It gets a little slow and bogged down. But then we get to a point at the end of the movie where we run into Paul Sorvino as Colonel Malcolm Grommet Spears, the militia leader. It becomes almost slapstick in nature for the movie because
yeah.
he's just got some bizarre off-the-wall shit that he reminds me of Paul Sorvino, which you would recognize from a lot of different smaller roles too. It honestly felt to me like Jonathan Winters in a horror flick.
Yeah, yeah. It was...
All I was waiting for him to do was do that quick side-to-side look with his eyeballs.
But, once it hit that part, it just, like I said, the movie parts of the movie were very confusing. I didn't understand what direction it was going, and it was like, okay, we owe a bunch of people favors, you know, so we're just gonna... We have a lot of favors to call in, so we're just going to get a bunch of people in this movie. We don't care what happens.
But once we got met,
who cares if it makes sense?
Once we got up to the militia segment of the movie, it made sense. It just felt like a completely different movie, and it just did not.
Well, the only reason the only reason that they called him in was because he was like he owned some radio shows, so that they could get on the air to make an announcement stating that the stuff is bad stuff. And
yeah, but he also led the attack. His soldiers to attack the
But record. What kills me is that this crazy person who has himself towered off into some abandoned castle in the middle of Georgia. I don't get that. You don't see that many castles in the U.S. But
especially in Georgia.
Yeah. An abandoned castle in the middle of Georgia who owns these radio stations, goes and says, okay, everybody, the stuff is bad for you, get rid of it. And everybody does. All of these people who are being controlled by the stuff hear this guy on the radio and say, oh, yeah, okay, sure.
And they'd also given us a whole bunch of rambling lines about how everybody thought he was crazy. That's why he's hiding out in this castle in Georgia, because everybody thought he was too radical and crazy. But now all of a sudden, as soon as he gets on the radio,
believes him.
It's good to go.
Yeah, I didn't get that. Also, they never explained to us what it was.
Yeah.
That drives me nuts.
Just that it was something from the center of the earth. With evil intentions. And it tasted awfully damn good.
It looked like marshmallow fluff.
It did.
I bet you that's what it is. It's the marshmallow fluff. You know?
Yeah.
Because that stuff is very addictive.
The only other thing that really bothered me in this movie and the nerdiness of it, there's a point where Jason's family is completely taken over by the stuff, and they're trying to force him to eat it, and he knows what it is. He doesn't want to eat it. So, and they send him to his room with his tub of stuff, and he, you know, and tell not to come down until he eats it. So he goes upstairs, dumps it in the toilet. Then he starts looking around, and he finds a can of shaving cream that he's going to make up a ruse to fool his parents that he's been eating his stuff. And then he comes downstairs and he's acting like, oh, I like it now, yada yada yada. The thing is, he'd been upstairs for like 20 minutes supposed to be eating this crap. So to fool them, he fills it to the rim.
Yeah, with shaving cream.
Why don't you fill it half full, especially if you know you're going to have to eat it in front of him. Why don't you fill it half full so it looks like you've been working on it?
Yeah. And, you know, yeah, that was a little bit, and you know. And shaving cream also has a very unique scent to it, and this stuff is supposed to have no scent, no flavor, nothing. You know, it's just a sweet treat.
Nah, Barbasol doesn't smell. It wasn't the menthol stuff.
Well,
it was a red and white cane. Oh. You guys out there would know what I'm talking about.
Well, still, I think that stuff has a very, because it has a soapy scent to it.
Nah.
All shaving cream does, I thought. But then again, I don't use that stuff, so.
So, folks, that's The Stuff from 1985. It's a very unique movie. It's not one I would recommend you run out and buy, but it's one worth throwing in the Netflix queue just to see. It's a unique movie. It's different.
Just to say you saw it. I mean, I watched it. I didn't like, you know, it wasn't that great. It's not one that I would recommend. But yeah, if you want to beef up your horror repertoire, then yeah, say, go watch it.
If you can find it somewhere in a bargain bin for a buck or two, then you'd be all right, because it's worth it. It's worth a buck or two for Michael Moriarty's performance alone.
Yeah, for that, and you know, and Brian Bloom's blue eyes. Hey, I used to have his picture on my wall when I was little.
Well, at least, you know, it's not Corey Haim with his poster of Rob Lowe.
Yeah, well.
So there you have it, folks. That's 1985's The Stuff.